Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Being I'm the 30th pick, I'm good enough for the Thursday night ceremony, but it's late and I'm ready for bed.
All right, as you tear off another page off your calendar, you know that we are approaching the NFL draft. We are now 30 days before the 2026 NFL draft. And as we've promised, we are coming on every single day leading up to that to talk about the draft picks and the history of the NFL draft. We promise you no mock drafts and no speculating where your team's going to pick. We're going to tell you the history of what happened. And Ed Cleese joins me once again as we talk about pick number 30. Ed, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Thanks for having me again, Darren.
Yeah, Ed, pick number 30 is a very interesting pick. It is the most popular position selected over the last 90 years has been defensive back. That's been done 9 times. So 10% of the time, a defensive back has been chosen in this slot selection of the NFL draft.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so we have some very interesting things going on. What is your take on pick 30?
Well, the two words when I put down for most for pick 30 was mostly forgettable. Again, you know, I'm going back to 1980. So about 45 years of the draft. So I said mostly forgettable with a few heavy hitters. I had a easy time coming up with the top of my top five list and a harder time coming up with the bottom. There were a couple of strange cases with this pick. Keith Browner was taken in 1984 by the Bucks, one of the Browner brothers. And all four Browner brothers played in the NFL, which is really, I don't know if there's been another family that's done that. I'm not sure.
Not since the Nesser brothers back playing for Columbus.
Right. Yeah. So, and Keith had some trouble, in Tampa. He wound up out of the league. I think he got into some sort of legal issues as well. He got into a dispute with the Bucks. So he was, again, when you're this far down in the draft, it's difficult to call anybody a bust, but Keith Browner would probably be in that conversation. One guy that's definitely in that conversation that no one's going to remember because he played for my team. He was drafted by the Redskins in 1996. And I don't know if there's another case of this was a first round pick. I believe this was the last pick of the first round that year. Washington traded up into the first round to draft offensive tackle from Penn State, Andre Johnson. Here's something interesting. I don't know if we can say this about any other first-round pick ever. I don't know. Andre Johnson never played a down for the Redskins and was not hurt. So that is how bad of a pick it was. He basically couldn't make the team his rookie year, and so they didn't really have him on the roster. They had him on, like, some reserve or whatever it was then. He didn't play one play. And I think it was either the year or two later, he wound up on the Lions. He did appear in 3 games. I don't know if that means he actually got on the field or not, but he was, like, I guess, active. Mm-hmm. So, and then he was out. Then his career was over. So he never really ever played football, and it wasn't due to injury. That is pretty amazing for a first-round pick.
Yeah, it sure is, but I think that's the very definition of a bust, you know.
Yes, I mean, because usually, like we all know, the if you draft somebody high enough, they're going to get a second chance. Someone's going to take a chance on him because they're like, oh, he's a first round pick. Well, you know, we bring him in for free and see what happens. And like with him, I don't know if he just didn't want to play football or what the deal was. But I do remember the whispers from the minute camp started was this ain't happening with this guy. That's kind of what was going on. So yeah, there are some other names. Like Joseph Addai, the running back, was taken here. Ross Verba, a pretty good offensive lineman for the Packers in this spot, and a nice tight end for the Steelers, of course, with Heath Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can hear the call.
Heath Miller was taken there, but none of those guys made my top five.
Wow. Okay. All right. So who did you have in your top five?
Number five. And then again, the back end was kind of tough. A lot of these guys had pretty good careers and were kind of all the same to me, but I have Patrick Kearney, 1999 defensive end taken by the Falcons. He had 11 year career, 8 of those with Atlanta. He made the Pro Bowl with the Seahawks as well. He had 4 seasons with 10 or more sacks, which is pretty impressive. And he was first team all pro at the end of his career with Seattle. So that's kind of strange. But one thing that kind of stood out to me is in the history of the Atlanta Falcons, I can't think of very many defensive players at all that stick out. Like if you said, hey, name 5 awesome defensive players for the Falcons, I kind of have to rack my brain. But like Patrick Kearney does come to mind. Like mm-hmm. I immediately think of him. So that's clearly a very good pick at number 30 if you're getting a player of his caliber.
Yeah, okay. So I'm surprised that he's down that low. So who do you have above him?
Number 4 was kind of like almost the same for me, and that was Keith Bullock, linebacker for the Titans, taken in the year 2000. He had played exactly the decade of the 2000s in Tennessee. So he played 2000 to 2009. As when he played in for the Titans. And that was a good decade for Tennessee. They were a good team. They made the playoffs a bunch. He did make the All-Pro team one time. But this is probably why I remember him and why he stuck out. Darren, he missed 3 games total in that decade.
Wow. At a linebacker where you're getting hit constantly.
Right.
Really good sign.
So he's just one of those guys, Darren, that every time you watch the Titans game and they were on a decent amount because they were playing in fairly important games, Keith Bullock. He's always on the field. He may not be making an impact of like a Ray Lewis or somebody like that, but he's a really good player. And boy, you're going to throw a party if you draft a player that good at number 30.
Yeah, most definitely. I think any team would love to have a linebacker of that caliber coming out of the draft that late in the draft. All right. So who do you have above Bullock?
And so at number 3, now our top 3, we're going to get into some Canton talk because number 3 is going to be Reggie Wayne, drafted in 2001 by the Colts. I love the fact that he played all 14 seasons in Indianapolis. He had a little bit – he's not in Canton yet, and he may or may not get there. He had a slow start to his career. He didn't catch 80 passes in a season until his 5th season, and then he kind of exploded from there. I think what people take away from him maybe a little bit is the fact that because he played with Peyton and because he was always the second best receiver on his team behind Marvin Harrison, that maybe some people pigeonhole him a little bit as he caught a lot of the crumbs from the Colts. But I remember him as a dynamic, dominant player that did a lot of damage on his own. I almost had him at number 2. I think he's probably a guy that should get a yellow jacket, a gold jacket.
Yeah, I think he'll get one here pretty soon. I mean, Harrison got in, Peyton's in. I think he's going to get in there also.
All right. So number 2, we have somebody who does have a gold jacket, and that is Eric Allen, cornerback drafted in 1988 by the Eagles. What I like about his career is he was drafted by the Eagles. He made the Pro Bowl with the Eagles. He made the Pro Bowl with the Saints. And then he was good in Oakland at the end of his career as well. So a little bit different because a lot of these guys on this list haven't bounced around much. Eric Allen did. Another thing I liked is in his last 3 seasons in the NFL, he played all 16 games those 3 seasons. So at the end of his career, he was still a very durable, very good player. I also like this. He had 8 career touchdowns. He had 4 in 1 year. In 1993, he had 4 pick sixes. And he had a total on those of 200 yards in returns. So for a while there, he was not only shutting people down, he was making huge plays. And I think by the time he retired, he was always considered one of the best in the position as he was playing. And I think by the time he retired, he was in that, no doubt, he's going to the Hall of Fame, and he's there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. But I'm surprised. Okay, no. So who do you have that's above the Hall of Famer? We said there's 2 Hall of Famers, And the other Hall of Famer played long before, or was drafted long before 1980. So who do you have above him?
So I can't, I really don't want to be doing this and making you puff your chest out, because my number one pick on the 31st pick was a current Pittsburgh Steeler defensive lineman that I think is going to go to the Hall of Fame, Cam Hayward. And my number one pick on the 30th pick in the draft is another Pittsburgh Steeler defensive lineman that I think is going to go to the Hall of Fame, and that is TJ Watt. I think TJ Watt is the greatest number 30 pick of all time. I don't think, you know, drafted in 2017, so his career is of course still going. I think he's in the Hall of Fame if he retired right now. So I don't think he has anything. I don't think he has any more boxes to check. I think he's there right now. He can do whatever he wants the rest of his career, and he's in. He's had 5 years with 13 or more sacks, which is wild. And then he's had 9 interceptions and 14 fumble recoveries. What I love about TJ Watt is that he is not a one-trick pony. He's not just a great edge rusher, pass rusher. He is a great player that happens to be an edge rusher. And easy Hall of Famer. He's going to be there. Back-to-back Steelers, number one.
I love it. Love to hear it. I'm glad this is a Steeler podcast you're joining here. So, no, those are some really solid picks. I figured I knew the answer to that one too, but I was going to make you bring it out to me a little bit. There was some more famous Steelers that were drafted here and also came from my favorite college, Notre Dame. Terry Hanratty was drafted by the Steelers back in 1969 in the second round, was a Steelers starter for a little bit. If you remember back to your early Steelers history, Terry Hanratty, Terry Bradshaw, Joe Gilliam all started in that first Super Bowl season, and really Chuck Knoll didn't make a decision who his starter was, and Bradshaw ended up getting the nod after some happenings there. And New York Giants fans, we talked about a Hall of Famer. Sam Huff was drafted in 1956 by the G-Men and played a great career there and ended up with Washington later on.
Well, and really, he also, you know, he was it 60 Minutes that did the Violent World of Sam Huff? It was one of the first inside looks at football and sort of the price that a lot of the guys pay to get there. And, you know, along with NFL films, I think those were the types of things that started to really ingrain the NFL with the American public. He was one of the first to give a little bit of a behind the scenes look. And not only did he end his career with Washington, but he wound up in the booth, Darren, with Frank, Sonny, and Sam. So Frank Herzog, Sonny Jurgensen, and Sam Huff were the three-man radio booth all through the Gibbs era, all the way up into the 2000s, I think really well into the 2000s. Now Frank had left before, but Sam was in the booth for the Redskins for, 25, 30 years.
Yeah, definitely a great name and a great broadcaster. Like you said, definitely people remember him for many things. And I also want to mention back in 1939, Vic Botari was drafted by the Brooklyn Dodgers in that slot of pick number 30. Ended up having a great career in early NFL football. So
what was that? When you were watching that draft, Darren, what was that like when old Vic was taken?
It was in black and white, so it was hard to see, you know. Mel Kiper, that was his first draft, I think.
Vic found out he was drafted by Pony Express.
That's for sure. But the drafts back then were before Christmas. So,
oh, wow.
So they're during the season was still being played, many times before the championship game. So imagine being in the front office then. Your team's in the playoffs, or I guess not the playoffs, but in a championship, and you're also trying to figure out who you're going to pick for your 17 rounds of the draft.
Yep. Oh, one thing I did forget, because I want to mention this, because same thing with the 30th pick, no quarterbacks taken at the 30th pick either. And since 1980. I know Hanratty you mentioned, but since 1980, we had zero.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we had Hanratty, but we had four straight at pick number 30 from 1967 through 1970. Hanratty was part of that. Gary Beben, the UCLA quarterback, was drafted the year before Hanratty in 68. So remember the great Rose Bowl he had. I guess that takes us down to our draft stat of the day. And this is one that you're going to enjoy and I'm going to enjoy, because both of our favorite colleges are tied for something. They are the only two schools to produce the top pick in consecutive NBA and NFL drafts. Notre Dame accomplished this in 1971 with Austin Cam, and 72 with Walt Paluski.
Can I guess the next one?
Yeah, I think this is very recent. So go ahead. I'll let you do the
series. Would it be Sam Bradford and Blake Griffin?
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct. So just a little bit of trivia for you and bring some basketball fans into this one too.
Boomer Sooner.
And that takes us to I didn't discuss our top colleges drafted at number 30. There was a tie. Miami of Florida and Ohio State each had three taken at that selection. And the most popular position was also a tie. That's running backs 12 different times and offensive tackles a dozen times. So good chance maybe one of those will be picked in the upcoming draft here too. So good stats there. So, Ed, unless you have anything further to go, I think I'm going to say our adieu for today. And don't worry, we'll be back tomorrow to talk about pick number 29 as we approach closer to the NFL draft. Ed, thanks for joining us today.
We'll see you tomorrow.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.